I was so fascinated by the 100-mile distance, thought it was completely impossible, you know, at one point. And so when I started to kind of, I don't know, pull back the layers of the brain that, you know, of the belief of like, hey, maybe this is actually a possibility, then, like I said, I, you know, when I'm in. And so it was just a matter of learning and talking. And I think both of us were pretty enamored with it.
I can't remember if I had decided to run the 50K before or after I did that marathon, because I know the marathon didn't go like I wanted it to go. But
yeah, I feel like we were both signed up, but I.
So that'd be the second ultra that we did of two that we signed up together and you didn't run.
Yeah.
He has a way of talking me into doing some ultras and he just doesn't run them also. But
Hello and welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance, whether you're running an ultramarathon or just living your life. I'm Eric Dieter, your host. I am an ultramarathon runner. And when we trail runners get together, we never know where the conversation might lead. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guests this week are Jeff Winchester and Jeremy Reynolds. They go by online, they call themselves the Ultra Running Guys. They are both ultramarathon runners. They have a podcast called The Ultra Running Guys, and they are also race directors. They have a race called the Hydra, another one called the Final Countdown. We have a lot of good things to talk about. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jeff and Jeremy, the Ultra Running Guys.
And welcome back to
the Ultra Running Guys.
So, Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester, the Ultra Running Guys, and we've been having the podcast we were just talking about since late 2020, and really running for me, 2014, 2015 was kind of the introduction, and Spartan races were the gateway drug to running, and then Jeff was interested in the marathon running, so jumped into that, and 2016 was the year of ultra. That's kind of when it all kicked off.
Okay.
On our side.
So how far did you go in the Spartan?
Well, so 2014 and 2015 did a handful of kind of each of the distances. And at that time, I can't remember if they had the ultra at that time. Maybe they were just rolling it out. But, you know, and that's before it was a set 5K, 10K, you know, those kind of distances. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was like you show up, you don't know quite what the distance might be, 3 to 5, 7 to 9, or, you know, 13 plus, depending on whether you're running the sprint, super, or beast. Mm-hmm. But you didn't know what the obstacles were going to be. Some of them were kind of covered, and it was really a lot of fun. For one of the two of us, it was really a lot of fun. It was also the motivation for me personally to get better at running because we've talked about it a few times. You know, I was very comfortable in the gym, and that was kind of a strength of mine. So a lot of the obstacles I tended to do fairly well with. I mean, I did my share of burpees for sure. Because in Spartan, you do burpees if mm-hmm. you miss something. But I needed to be better at the running. And so that was a big motivation for when Jeff went that direction for me to kind of go with him. And what was your take?
Which part of that?
No. The enjoyment of the Spartans.
I enjoyed them all right. No, I started running when I was 39. So that was basically in 2012 or 2011. I was going through some health issues and in a pretty stressful job. And so a friend of mine got me to do something because I needed to start trying to get a little bit healthier. And I tried running, did not do well at it, kind of hated it a lot. I had a lot of, I guess you could say, trial and error. Mm-hmm. I would go out on a run and find out that my heart rate was just about to beat out of my chest. And I had to often walk. And so long story short, I spent a good deal of time kind of learning to slow down and embrace the idea of walking and to start trying to build up an actual ability to run because I'd never been an athlete growing up or anything. This was the first time I tried to do any kind of exercise for that matter. I wasn't overweight or anything like that, but I would be definitely what you would call skinny fat and just internally a lot of health issues with it. So they did that for a little bit, got to where I was running 5Ks, 10Ks, even got into a half marathon. Then in 2015 decided I wanted to run a marathon, and I think it was December of 2000, 15 that I did my first marathon. And we trained together for it at that time. And so, yeah, I mean, from that point forward, I just started doing a lot of endurance running and stuff. And I guess I skipped over the Spartans because that was my least favorite thing that we did together. But we did that for a few years before we got into the marathons. And so, like you said, 2014 and 15, we were working out together at the gym, got into Spartan races. I'm not a physically muscular specimen by any stretch of the imagination. And so things like obstacles sometimes would crush my grapes. And I would do a lot of burpees along the way. I did like it. I mean, I hated it at times, but I loved the fact that I was challenging myself to do things that I never thought I could. I think that's what attracts me to just even doing the ultras themselves, is that I never believed that about myself, that I could do something like this. And it's still what motivates me, the fact that I'm doing something I never thought I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I
So you guys, you met at the gym, or did you know each other beforehand?
So it's a little bit of a funny story. Yeah. So we actually met at a men's small group at Bojangles in the morning. And so I was coming from the gym.
What is Bojangles? I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, wow. So Bojangles is a Southern tradition.
Okay. The song from the song, I kind of had the Southern flair to it. So I'd imagine it was something Southern.
It is definitely a Southern restaurant. It is, I think they started in Charlotte, if I am correct.
It's just a Southern fast food, though. So it was early morning. That's where you grab, a chicken biscuit, that kind of thing. And the guys would get together and we would do small group stuff. And it was just kind of a good fellowship. And at that time, I was just looking to get back into shape. I had been military for quite a while. And so fitness was just a part of my day. And then I went to the corporate world and realized that, hey, I have to work a lot harder. And, I had not been consistent. So bottom line is I decided I was going to do a body transformation challenge, came to Bojangles, with the group of guys and said, here's what I'm going to do. And who wants to do it? And I got one sucker to raise his hand.
The irony about it, Eric, is the fact that at Bojangles, all the rest of us are eating our chicken sandwiches and our Bo rounds, which are basically round hash browns.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not eating anything. Like, don't you want something to eat? It's like, no. It's like, of course, you're healthy. The rest of us are not.
And at the time, I was coming from the gym. So I had just got into the habit, was putting myself in the habit. I was pretty new of the get up early and do things, mm-hmm. which, ended up kind of playing a big role in what we did after that. But yeah, so, I'd go work out and then show up and I'm like, no, I don't want a chicken biscuit.
Want some sweet tea, anything like that.
Yeah.
It was good, man. It was good times.
But so were you one of those guys that would bring like a green smoothie into the,
I probably did have a shaker cup half the time. Just some protein or something like that. But yeah, as many ultra runners are, I tend to be kind of all in, or, it's an all or nothing. So I tend to have that kind of personality.
Okay.
And so, when I was jumping in, I'm either like off the rails and I'm eating everything in sight, or I am, pretty on the nutrition train. And at that point I was pretty focused.
So. Yeah, the guys in my men's group didn't join me at all. they still kind of look at me like, they ask about it, but they don't, it's not their thing. I didn't get anybody to join me.
Over the time, we actually ended up getting a pretty good group of people in the morning. And I mean, there was probably times we had 7, 8, 10,
mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, three pastors out of the group. And it was just, I think over time people got curious and would jump in and that group would shrink and it would grow. But called ourselves the 5 a.m. crew, and we would show up at 5 a.m. and do our thing. And it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. We had our 5 a.m. challenge. There was they did a discipleship program. And, it started at 5 a.m. And so we had to be at the coffee shop and, it was a commitment that they asked. And a lot of the guys in the group, like, no, they didn't want to do that. So we lost a few that time.
Yeah, but, for sure.
But yeah, 5 a.m. is a great, you can get a lot of stuff done at 5 a.m. because nobody bothers you.
That's why I get up even earlier than that now.
Yeah.
We're often up before that, just with things.
Yeah. Yeah. I can do that in the wintertime for some reason. With the time changes, I have difficulty making that switch. So
I feel that right now.
Yeah. It takes a look. So you guys started working out together. Whose idea was it to do ultra marathons?
Well, I think it was kind of a joint. So again, Jeff was really, it was focused on the marathon because I wanted to get better at that personally, even though I said, hey, I'm not going to run the marathon just because I didn't have too much interest in it at that point. Or maybe I just didn't want to pay the money to sign up. I don't remember exactly what it was. But and he said we trained together for it. We didn't physically train together. He shared his plan and we really just held each other accountable, right? It was, hey, today's okay. A 9-mile run, whatever it is. How did yours go? We'd look at each other's stuff. But as that, so we've got a big local event, Southern Tour Ultra, and the first year was in 2016. And so that was a 50K and a 50-mile event, and then they do a big relay. And so I actually don't remember exactly how it came about, but we both signed up for the 50K, and that was January. So that was only a month after his first marathon. Mm-hmm. And that's really what kicked it off. I ended up winning an entry into the Wilmington Marathon that year and some coaching that came with it. And the coach said, I'm not going to allow you to run a 50K before your first marathon. So I ended up doing part of the relay. I think I ran 20 miles of it. But by that point, you know, Born to Run for me was a huge influencer. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really a big part of just starting to think, because even by that time, we were already talking about, I think, the JFK 50 and some different things. And I was so fascinated by the 100-mile distance, thought it was completely impossible, you know, at one point. And so when I started to kind of, I don't know, pull back the layers of the brain that, you know, of the belief of like, hey, maybe this is actually a possibility. Then, like I said, I, you know, when I'm in, I'm in. And so it was just a matter of learning and talking. And I think both of us were pretty enamored with it.
I can't remember if I had decided to run the 50K before or after I did that marathon. Because I know the marathon didn't go like I wanted it to go. But yeah,
I feel like we were both signed up. But
So that'd be the second ultra that we did, two that we signed up together, and you didn't run.
Yeah.
He has a way of talking me into doing ultras, and he just doesn't run them also. But so the Southern Tour was about a month after my first marathon. Did the first 50K. Like you said, he did he was training for a marathon that he won entry to after that. But it was my first exposure to ultras and absolutely loved it. It was brutal in a way that I never imagined. You know, I had my first marathon was like 4:11, 4 hours, 11 minutes. And I wanted to come underneath 4. So, you know, I was mad. I was angry. I was going to go run the Southern Tour and I was going to do a lot better. And then I didn't realize that trails are a lot different than road, and add another 5 miles. And it's like adding into two more days worth of effort. And so But it was great. Like, it was cool to kind of go through that experience to recognize that just because you did a marathon, there's this whole other family of running that exists that's unlike what you were thinking running was even about. And so that was my first exposure to that environment, to that community. And we live in Eastern North Carolina, and there's not even an ultra community here. And they had just started running this. That was their first year of doing the Southern Tour as well. And bringing an ultra event here to the area. So it was a new experience for a lot of the people here. And so it's just been crazy to watch how it's grown where we live, and just being a part of it. So
that's interesting. So I'm just curious, who was the one who got the idea to bring that up? I mean, usually if an area has got a lot of runners, then, you know, it's kind of easy to do that. But somebody to say, oh, let's do a trail 50K, and you know, that's kind of a step of faith to say that you get people to sign up.
Well, the race director operates a run club here in town, and it's a very large run club. And he's got affiliates like in Greenville and some other areas. And he's got a partner out of Greenville, North Carolina, that or is it South Carolina?
South Carolina.
It's Greenville, South Carolina, that he's partners with at the time. And he was doing ultra runs. And so I think that's where the idea came, to try to do that down in Wilmington where we live. And his first year doing it, he had a 50K, but his primary event was actually a 50-mile relay event, and then a 5-mile solo event as well that people could do. And those two events were huge. And it just began to build people's recognition of the ultras themselves. And I don't remember how many runners he had his first 50K, but I mean, it was maybe 40 or 50 people at the most.
Yeah, and it's a huge event. So it's,
now it's big, yeah.
And even then, I feel like there was like 800 people. They had something like 80 teams within the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And so a 10-person team, and so you get 80 teams out there, it's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so to Jeff's point, so it's Tom Clifford is who we're talking about. He runs Without Limits. He was a previous guest of ours because of Southern Tour. And if I remember the story right, you know, he went out with Matt Hammersmith. Matt Hammersmith is the partner that Jeff was talking about. And he went out to with him at like a 24-hour event, a 100-mile event. And you know, this is a guy that I think Tom has been top 50 at Boston, if I remember right. I mean, just incredible runner, you know, but he's used to time and precision. And now he's sitting on some trail at midnight, you know, marking on a whiteboard as runners are coming through and people are drinking around the fire. And it's like, that was his introduction to, we need to do this, something like this in Wilmington. And I think that's what kind of gave birth to it. But one of the things that we love about Southern Tour, and we put on a few races of our own and have taken inspiration from it, is because of that. Like you said, you have now, call it 80 teams of people that are out there to run a 5-mile loop. They get to witness 50K runners, 50-mile runners. And so you have all these people that normally would not show up at an ultra running event that get to see it, recognize that it's normal people, watch people persevere. And so that, I think, has been pretty magical. And it's one of the things that we try to do through both our podcast and our events, mm-hmm. just to get people, because you know how it is. You see something and all of a sudden the light bulb goes off. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, why not me? That person doesn't look like Superman or Superwoman. Why can't I go do that at some point? And so it's a great event for that. And it's I think, been part of the inspiration of thinking, okay, how do we, you know, do something similar.
There's a lot of people say that about me.
That's right.
Jeff, they're like, can do it. I can give that a shot.
I thought you were going to say Superman.
Superman. Not Superman. They're like, I can give that a shot.
Jeff can do it. That's right. What we should just call it. If Jeff can do it.
If Jeff can do it.
If Jeff can do it.
Anyone can run an ultra. Yeah. True story.
It's kind of funny because that was, you talk about seeing somebody. That's what did it for me. And, you know, I wasn't even running. I was, you know, I'd started mountain biking just to try to get in shape. But I used to go to church with. I mean, I wasn't even really that good friends with him. I just followed him on Facebook. So he showed up on Facebook, his 50-mile race. And I went, that looks like fun. And I'd had some transformation going on and, you know, lost weight and changed some things in my life. And I told my wife, I'm going to go run trails. But I didn't tell her that I'm running that race next year.
Right.
That's awesome.
Then I went to the 100 was the same way. I saw a guy that was, you know, after I slept in my 50 mile, a guy who was running 100 mile, I saw him and I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, I didn't, you know, whatever he's experiencing, I didn't get there. And so it was like, and of course, then as the running community, if you mention that you're going to run 100 miles, you'd have, you know, five people. Well, yeah, why wouldn't you? There's something to be said about the people you surround yourself with to inspire you.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, I think belief is the first step. And I said before I didn't believe it, but I literally, the way that I found out about 100-mile runs the very first time was having a conversation with somebody and they said, oh, you know, so-and-so ran 100 miles. I said, no. You said 100 miles, like you must have meant something different. And I said, no, I meant 100 miles. And I literally Googled it. I was like, people can't run 100 miles. I thought it was physically impossible. And then realizing like this, so that was the first, like, oh, my reality just changed. People do this more often than I thought. And then that's, you know, somebody said, hey, born to run and those types of things. But once the belief creeps in, well, then it's a whole different thought process. And you know, probably, you know, better than most that people say, oh, I could never. But it's like, once you get out of that mindset of what would it take? What does this look like? How do I, you know, what are the steps? And I think by the time we got to Southern Tour, my stepfather is from Boonesboro, Maryland, which is right where JFK 50 starts. And so he was the first one to tell me, oh, if you're interested in that stuff, you should look at this race, the JFK 50. It's right where I grew up. You know, and at that point I realized like, oh, this is possible. So I think belief is just the first step. And I mean, for me, that changed everything.
I don't know how you talk me into that kind of stuff. Yeah. Because I was wondering how we ended up JFK 50. So that's the reason.
Yeah, that's how, I mean, that's the first way I heard of it. He told me, I looked it up and said, this looks great. Look, it's the country's oldest 50 miler. That was that.
Yeah. The thing I hear from people is when they say I've run 100 miles, they say, well, I can't imagine doing that. And
right.
And I say, well, that's where you start. It has to be something you can imagine and see that, yes, I can do this. And that's so important, I think, for anything. Is it all starts in being able to see that.
You two are insane. Like, I never thought I could run 100 miles when I did the first one.
What, the JFK man?
In any of the, well, like when I did my first 100, I never thought I could do that. I didn't believe I could do it. Even after I DNF'd the first one, and then I had even more doubt going into it. I never had a belief that it could be done.
I don't believe that. I don't think you would have signed up for it.
That's not true. Because one of the things I always want to do is prove myself I can do things I didn't think I could do. And so I really didn't think I could do it. I even sign up, like even now when I look at race, I'm like, I'm not sure if I can pull this bad boy off.
Because you weren't ready at that point, or because you didn't believe you could ever get there?
Because I don't think I could ever get there. Because historically, I would say I don't think I could get there. Yes, y'all having this pre-belief idea, that's cool and all, but that's not everybody.
That says a lot about how Jeff feels about Jeff.
That's true, but that's how I am. And that what you're saying is not a truth for everybody.
So it's still a truth, though, that once you, if you believe, then that changes the thing. And so obviously, though, you had come to the conclusion that people can do this.
Correct.
And now whether it was just a matter of whether you could get yourself to do what
other
people were doing.
Agreed. Yeah, I recognize that other people could do it. And I thought that was amazing.
Right.
So I'm curious, when you sign up for races that you don't think you can, you have this doubt. What is the kind of thing that gets you? I mean, because you've successfully, proved yourself wrong. So what is kind of the process you go through, in proving yourself wrong? I mean, because I think if you have that doubt, then going into it, then that's like carrying, extra gear you don't need.
Well, you definitely carry an extra gear. You're definitely carrying a weight on your gear. I'm not going to disagree with that. I would say that I am, and this is not even being dramatic, but it's going to sound dramatic when I say it. I am terrified when I do a lot of the races, like particularly with those that have elevation, terrified of like how bad this is going to be. But there's this sick, twisted side of me. It's like, that's going to be great. Like, it's just going to be great. And it's going to suck in a lot of ways. But it is, I know how bad it's going to be. And I'm okay with that.
But that's different than a belief. So like, well, so Jeff's got
lots of problems.
The what's the
Zion 100?
The Zion 100 that's coming up.
The Zion, yeah. Okay. That's
100K.
In.
Well, yeah, sorry. Zion 100K.
100K. Okay. Zion National Park in Utah, right?
Yes.
Okay.
April 15th.
Which is a lot more elevation than us flatlanders are used to. And you've done some stuff with elevation, yeah. Mountain masochist.
Mm-hmm. And DNF.
I thought North Carolina was at least some hills.
Western North Carolina.
Yeah, we got mountains in the west. We're in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is on the east coast. We have beach.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So fairly low. Okay.
So I think I told this story before, but, Jeff, not too...
this year.
Not too long. Yeah, this year. I mean, he had a 70-mile week with less than 100 feet of gain.
Yeah.
So, wow. You're talking pancake flat. Like, okay. I mean,
don't be jealous.
That's Florida flat.
Yeah. I ran 8 miles this morning and there's one little, I mean, it's got to be 2 feet of elevation. And I call it Mount Wilmington in my neighborhood just because it's like, oh, I actually feel a little bit of incline. Right. And I mean, it's probably 50 feet long. Like, it's just a little, literally a bump in the road. But that's what we're dealing with. And so, I know Jeff's been very proactive in terms of having to get ready for elevation. We're not just hitting different trails. It's stair climbers and
treadmills, weighted vests, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but to the point, what I was going to say is, I know that there's fear for Zion 100K because one, it's unknown. And two, it's going to be different and it's going to be hard. Is there, I know there's probably like doubt, like, I hope I can. That's not a situation though where you
go. No, I'm absolutely excited. Like, I cannot wait to get there. I'm terrified of the challenges I'm going to be faced with it, and not sure what's going to potentially. I'm not foolish enough to believe that something's not going to go wrong. I don't approach these pie in the sky, Pollyanna, that, you know, I'm going to go run a 50K, 100K, 50 miles, 100 miles, whatever, and it's going to be a cakewalk, and that all the training I've done is going to make this some sort of easy thing. I don't believe that ever. I believe it's going to be challenging, and that can be terrifying if you don't know what it's going to be. But that's what's cool about it, you know, and that's what I like about it. So it's this bipolar side of me that likes both the extremes of being deathly afraid of it, but not like fear is like I don't want to do it, but like this is going to suck. And then, but like Zion 100K, I'm stoked. I cannot wait to be there. I think it's going to be an incredible experience no matter how it plays out, because I'm going to get to be at a place and do some things and see some things I've never seen before. And it's a great race. So super excited about it.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome. Yeah, you talk about flat. I live in Kansas City, and Kansas has a reputation for being flat. And Eastern Kansas, though, has its share of hills. And there was somebody who came here from Germany to a race that it's the course I run on. And it's a 10-mile loop around a lake. And I think in the 10 miles, we get 1,700 feet of elevation gain and loss. And, you know, and he was expecting an easy, you know, Kansas is flat. He was very, very surprised at what kind of challenge that it was.
But I would love that kind of loop.
Yeah, no kidding.
That would be ideal for us if we could get that. We would consider that elevation training.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You got to figure that's way more than Umstead when you break it down. 1,700 feet times 10. I mean, that'd be 17,000 feet of...
Well, 8 loops.
Well, 10 miles, 1,700 feet.
Yeah,
that's aggressive.
Yeah, they're good. And I was looking at a race in Iowa, and it's an 8-hour race, and they said that it's a 2-mile loop, and you have 400 feet of elevation. And so that's I looked at my Strava, and I did a 3-mile. There's a 3-mile loop that is in this park, and I had 700 feet in 3 miles. I was like, oh yeah, I could do that. I could do 400 in 2. That's not a bad math, but.
That sounds like climbing to me.
It is.
And you know, you talked about heart rate. You know, I have to go pretty slow, and even this year I'm even trying to slow myself down even more, just because it's so easy to push too hard.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you guys are you have a couple races that you put together. Is that what I understand, that you're director or creators or what?
Race directors.
Race directors, I think, is the official term.
Yeah.
But we essentially set out to trick people to get into ultra running is what it came down to. And so, you know, we say kind of our mission is to help people take their next step in ultra running, in their ultra running journey. And so that's how the podcast got started. It kind of started as a blog, as different things. But as we've grown, you know, it's the podcast. And then the races have come about. So you've got two races. They're very different, but they're very intentional. So the first one is the Hydra, which we've got coming up in a few weeks, probably 6 weeks. So it's April 22nd. And that race is a 50K individual or a 50K relay with up to 5 runners. But this year we've added the half marathon-ish. Because we're trail runners, right?
Oh, yeah, so of course. Yeah. It's never the distance that you publish.
Right. But we wanted to keep it unique. And so for us, you know, a big part of our thing is experience. And so what we've done is it's 5 different loops out on the trails. And runners don't know what order they're going to run those loops in. And so whether you're running the relay or the 50K, essentially you're going to get a wristband that gives you one of those 5 colors. There's signs that point all different directions. And so when we say go at the start, people are essentially running 5 different directions. And like Jeff said, it's a cockroach start and it's a whole lot of fun, but it just keeps it exciting. And then, so it's just a lot of fun. It keeps people on their toes. The other thing about it is you don't know who's winning, right? Because the loops are all not exactly the same distance. And so even if you're on your third loop, you and somebody else is on theirs, But so that's the Hydra. We're really looking forward to that one.
So do they, are the loops, you run that same loop until for the full distance, or do you run a variety? You start on one loop and then you go to the next.
Yeah. So essentially to complete the race, you have to run all five loops and gather the treasures, the Hydra. So the Hydra's treasure from each loop.
Okay.
And so again, that's what makes it exciting. If you're on the individual event and you're three loops in and you're the first one to come in because the loops are different lengths, you really don't know who's winning. Or if you're running the relay, you know, again, just because somebody comes back first doesn't mean necessarily that's who's winning with the different lengths and the colors. And so it makes it really hard to track who's winning, who's not. So it drives competitive people crazy.
Yeah. And the other challenge with it is that, again, I could be running a red loop. He could be running a blue loop. We've started together. And for part of the trail, we're running in the same direction. And then there's going to come a point, there's going to be a sign, and our loops are going to split off and go in different directions. And so we could be having a conversation, or we could be not paying attention and trying to, and just following each other. And one of us is now off course. And so your goal is to follow your colored loop the entire time. And again, you have no idea what place you're in. You just know that you've got to go out there and finish your loop. And on that loop, you've also got to bring back something that we've placed on the loop for you.
Yeah. Got to find your treasure.
Okay. So that's like an amazing race.
It's awesome.
It does a couple of things. I think one, it removes the pressure of place, right? Like obviously people are out there to do their best, but you're kind of just going to focus on what you're doing. Cause like Jeff said, even if you're chasing somebody on the trail, chances are you're going to split at some point. So I really like the idea of, you know, kind of being out there and it's quote unquote competing with yourself, right? But just, again, we're trying to get people used to the ultra experience. So especially when you get the relay runners and they're seeing the different things. But the second thing that it does,
he doesn't remember.
I completely love
it. For me, the competitive runners, and what's cool about it is that there are people who want to win the race. You have that in any race, right? And they're going to go as hard as they can. And what they mentally have to deal with is the fact that they really don't know if they're winning yet or not. They know they're putting in a hard effort, but they don't know if they're running hard enough to be ahead of somebody else because they just don't know what place they're in. Mm-hmm. And this past year, you know, I think there was like second and third were off by like 30 seconds at the most or something. And they just end up passing one another because the one guy thought he was wrapping it up and that he thought it had it done, and the other girls just flew by him.
He thought she was a relay runner and she ran him down in the last like couple hundred feet, you know, and he didn't realize that was his, you know, she was about to take a place from him on the podium.
Different loop, different color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Didn't have a clue where she was coming from, and because they pop out from different parts, different trails as well to the same central spot because they're coming into different areas. Well, it's cool.
That would be wild.
What I was going to say actually is that the thing that we like about it, right, is almost like what we said with Southern Tour. So because of the way it's set up, if you're a relay runner and there's a central location, all the loops come back to a central location. So if you're not running, you're hanging out. And so if you're a relay runner who showed up to run a 10K-ish trail loop, well, now you get to, when you're not doing your loop, watch the 50K runners come through, mm-hmm. right? So it's the same thing of, hey, look at that person. They're running 50K. And, you know, we asked some people to give us some feedback and do some videos that we use for promotion. And that was some of the things is, hey, you know, I'm not an ultra runner, but I have so much respect from what I'm seeing out there. And that was some of my favorite part was watching the 50K runners come across and do their thing. And so you really see people's eyes kind of, you know, I think light up. So again, that's part of the trick, right? Get them around 50K runners that they probably wouldn't show up to a 50K for.
Then we have another race.
So the other race is the Final Countdown. It's in September. It is an absolute blast and a unique format as well. And that one, it's a 1.3 mile loop. It starts out with 20 minutes on the clock, which is a 15 minute pace. And every loop we drop 20 seconds off the clock. So bottom line is you run the first loop, as long as you're back within 20 minutes, you're good to start the second loop. So it's really like a mix between a last man standing and a progression run. Mm-hmm. But the format is easy enough at the start that we've literally had people that said, this is my first time ever running. Like, hey, you know, my friends just brought me out and said, we think you can do a mile. And then it also brings out the ultra runners, you know, and some of the competitive folks in this past year. because the clock ticks down, everybody's going to find their final countdown, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, the clock is going to catch you. And so compared to most races where it's who's crossing the finish line first, for everybody, it literally is individual, mm-hmm. right? It's, am I going to be able to outrun the clock on this loop? But we had, you know, we had two gentlemen that got down to, the winner ran a 6:30 pace, close to 50 miles. And he actually went out for a 6:15 pace loop and walked it back. But, to see that caliber of running, you know, at that mileage, and have people that it's their first time, or it's the first time running 5 miles, first time running 10 miles, and be able to sit around and watch this, it's just a really neat event. And the other thing that we really enjoy is we have a PR bell out there. And so everybody that sets a distance PR, which is a fantastic way to do it, then we celebrate with, you know, them. They get to ring the bell and the place goes crazy. And it's just a really fun, exciting day.
That sounds like an amazing, race.
It's a lot of fun.
And we do play the song, and it's got a killer playlist. Don't shake your head. You put it together. It's good too.
Well, I did.
So was that a race that you guys came up with, or was it, I mean, you, as race directors, I mean, did you like came up with the concept of these races and put them
there
together?
There was another race that's nearby, that's very similar to it, that we saw that was going on, and we're like, we should try to pull something like that off. I can't remember the name of that race.
Mass Extinction.
Is that what it was?
One down in South Carolina, yeah, right?
Very similar format.
Similar, but geared more to get people to like 70 miles. And so I think we took the concept of saying, hey, what if we were to drop the clock down and kind of start to time people out? But we really wanted to kind of focus on, how do we attract the non-ultra? How do we make sure it's not a 12-hour event? Mm-hmm. You know, those kind of things. And so...
because I think within 5 hours, we're at a marathon distance for most people. I think the 5 hour mark is a marathon.
Yeah, I'd have to. That sounds about right. I think it's about five, and we could pull it up. But yeah, by 50K, it's still not. It doesn't sound too aggressive, right? I think they're down in the nines for pace, but to have to maintain a 9-something mile with 50K on your feet, right? Mm-hmm. You kind of get to the point where all of a sudden people start dropping pretty quick. And so you can be a pretty inexperienced runner and get several hours on your feet. And so from a, I got my money's worth, like, you're going to get your money's worth. But again, then it's just going to get exponentially hard.
And again, we live in Southeastern North Carolina. And so 5 hours in, it's 1 PM. And the heat is starting to crank
in September. Yeah.
And it's September timeframe. And so we've got heat and humidity, and people who come in from other areas, like we've had a couple people come, or a few people come from like up north, and they're like, this is a whole another ball game. And it's been just, it's an added twist with the weather, to be honest with you. So, and what they do when they can go that fast at that point of the day, at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's impressive.
Yeah. But to answer your question, so I think it took inspiration from, a couple other races, but bottom line, as we said, how do we create a unique experience? How do we get something when they show up to an ultra running guys event that, one, they're inspired, because that's what we really want, but two, they go, wow, that was different. Like, that's something I want to do again. Mm-hmm. And both of them just kind of were brainstorming sessions.
Yeah. And the Hydra, I don't know anything that does that. We literally just sat around and said, what if we tried this? And what if they had no idea who was going to win? What if they had no idea what place they were in? Like, what if they didn't, why do they have to run in the same order as each person? Why does everybody have to run the same loops in the same order?
Right. And
we just ask those types of questions, because that's just conventional logic. Because, everybody has to do that. No, they don't. Just do the organization and change it. So,
And the really fun thing was about it, as the day unfolds, the loops start, getting their reputation. And so you have relay runners coming up, and what they would do is they would pick, the color bracelet that they're about to run. And so people are reaching in the bag going, don't get orange, and they'd pull it like, oh, I got orange. And so it was just really fun to watch all that. And, cause at the beginning of the race, nobody knows anything. Mm-hmm. And as they're coming back and they're talking, oh, I heard orange is hard, I heard green is short, I heard, whatever. And so it was just really fun to watch it unfold. And this year will be a whole new experience. We're switching some things up a little bit, but,
Oh, wow. So it's a random drawing is what loop you get.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't get to know in advance.
Yeah. So they literally, when they would come back from the green loop with their green rock, because that was their thing, it was, okay, prove that I ran the whole course by showing you my treasure, and now you're going to reach in and pull out your next color.
Okay.
And so, to the point where you're about to run out, the relay runners had a little bit of prior, because once one went, you could say, who's your next runner? Come pick a color. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as chaotic. But yeah, I mean, for the individual runners, they don't know what's next, you know.
And so they could get the same loop.
You cannot get the same loop. You cannot get the same color loop.
That's the one that, to keep it fair, obviously, they all need to cover the same distance. So they all need to cover.
Right.
But so, yeah, once you're three loops in and you know you've only got a couple extra.
You know what colors you're down to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you probably haven't had the time to talk with other people. So they ranged from, I think, 5.7 to 6.8, something like that. So, ish. So you had a little mile, you know, about a mile difference in there. But when you're tired, that extra mile will wear on you.
I loved it. We have so many runners come up and they're like, well, so how long is that run? That loop I'm about to run. I said, yeah, it is. Well, is it the long one? I mean, yeah. Is it the short one? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Good luck.
Not only that, but they're on mountain bike trails. And so it's single track mountain bike trails, and we did group runs out there, and we'd run with 10 people, and I'd say, okay, what does your watch say? And you'd get a 3/4 mile, you know, range throughout. So we're like, ish,
yeah. Right? Yeah. There's always a variation.
Yeah.
But the running group, I'm part of the Lawrence Trailhawks. It's in Lawrence, Kansas. And they came up with a run last year called the Cactus Roulette. Hmm. And there's a part of the trail called Cactus Ridge, which is my least favorite part of the trail to run on. And it's three different loops. Yeah, three different loops. Three-ish to 4 point some miles. And you spin a roulette wheel to know what you're going to run next.
That's fun.
And it's time. So you can do, I think, 6 hour, 12 hour, 24. And so again, you don't know kind of the mileage. I mean, you run for time, but you're running for however mileage you can.
That's why they can get away with it. Cause it's three, it doesn't matter. As long as you're just going to cover X number of miles.
I'm liking that idea.
Yeah. It's a cool idea.
Yeah. And I was standing out there. I volunteered for it this year, and I was standing out there and like, we had to do this in the summer and do it with poker, you know, like a poker run. And it's like the same kind of, but yeah, you know, I didn't pursue that, but it was a lot of fun. And this year is like in Kansas, it was 50 degrees. It started at noon on Saturday. It was 50 degrees, people running in tank tops and shorts. Overnight, the temperature dropped and it was a wind chill of 14 below.
Wow.
In the night. And so we were trying to keep water from freezing. And we got our first 100-mile finisher this year. And somebody got in 100 miles. But it was fun because you get a poker chip for each time you come back for different color loop. And you could get the same loop, you know, over and over because it was just the luck of the wheel.
I like that concept.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
You could change our race to do the same thing.
Or do a new one.
No. You can make another race. What's one more race, right?
Yeah, no, to me, I'm comfortable having a race called the Hydra and just creating some brand new experience, if need be, out of that same name and letting that be the concept that this race may just be something unexpected.
Yeah, yeah. Or you could do a blend.
As long as it's a five-headed monster.
Yeah. I understand. I understand. Anyway.
So what's on your plate for this year for your runs? You got anything that's a goal race coming up?
So, yeah, my current goal race is the Zion 100K. Well, that's not true. My goal race is Western States all the time. And so what I do each year is do whatever races I can that will get me a lottery ticket so that I can put myself in the lottery for the following year to make myself eligible to get into Western States. So Zion 100K does that for me this year. If I'm
if I finish it or when I finish it, which is, I'm sure, the appropriate language I'm supposed to use here. When I finish the race, right, I will be eligible to have another entry into Western States for the following drawing of next year. I have to do the Zion 100K in 19 hours. If for some reason things fall apart and I'm unable to, then I will find another race to do in the fall, probably the Hennepin 100, or I'll look at maybe, I think Tunnel Hill is available still, something like that. There's also the Grindstone 100, which I would choose to be dead to do, because that one would be brutal. But
I've not heard of the Grindstone 100.
Yeah, it's a rough one. And so I will do everything I can not to do that one. But the goal would be to find a race to make that happen for another lottery ticket. If I finish Zion 100K, then all bets are off and I will be open to do whatever I want to do this fall.
Cool.
Yep. And for me, Capital Backyard Ultra in the end of May. So it's on Memorial Day weekend. It'll be my third year doing that race. I really enjoyed the backyard format. But at the same time, it's this will be my sixth, I think, of doing this type of format. And I was listening to Nick Bear talk on a podcast, and they were talking about how hard business had been and the things. And they were saying, as a founder, if I had to go back, knowing what I know now about how hard it was to get here, if I had to go back and do it all again, like, gosh, that would be overwhelming. And I was like, that's how I'm starting to feel about the backyard format. It's like, been there enough times to where I'm like, okay, you know, it's, I really look forward to it. But at the same time, it's kind of like the, you know, it's scary to face down, not just because it's hard, but because you know that you got to get through several hours of just grinding before it kind of gets hard. But anyways, I'm really excited about that. I got a chance to meet Lazarus Lake last year at that event, which was cool. And the winner, it's outside of Big's Backyard. That is the most competitive backyard in the US, or has been to date.
Oh, wow.
And so the winner last year went 61 hours, so 254 miles. So it's just neat to witness. It's an incredible group of runners. And so I'm excited about that.
That one doesn't even get interesting until after the first day.
Yeah. I mean, it really, you know, the first year, which I missed, and I knew, I was like, gosh, this is like the, I don't know, it's like sneaking past the gate to the Super Bowl, because it was a golden ticket race and nobody really knew about it. And there was only 35 runners. I told my wife, if I could get into this race, but it was 2020. So I was in it. And then 2020 happened and it moved and I didn't get a chance to compete. I think it went 29 hours that year. Then the first year I did it, it went 55 hours, 56 hours. But you know, at a hundred, when I dropped it 133 miles, there was 11 of us, I think. And then this year, or this past year, I mean, gosh, at 150 miles, I think there was like six people still up to 200 miles. It's just such a competitive group of runners that show up there, and super inspiring. But at the same time, like, you know, I mean, I want to do my best, but
you know, you're going to have to go for at least 2 days if you want to do your best.
Yeah, correct. I want to get the most out of myself. Where the first year I could have showed up going, maybe I could take it. You know, these, again, it's like showing up at the Super Bowl or the Olympic trials.
Do you believe you can win?
Not this year.
What happened to this whole belief conversation?
Do I believe I could do it eventually? Possibly. Do I think it's going to happen in the next couple of months? I don't think so.
Oh, that is awesome. It'll be awesome.
But I would, I mean, I would love to get a PR. So training is going pretty well right now. We'll see.
Do you believe you're going to get a PR? This is too easy.
I believe that I can get a PR.
I believe you'll get a PR.
That's great.
So after that, I have no idea.
It's hard to decide.
Yeah.
But
so what about you?
What about me? I am looking at across the years at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going back to the Hawk 50 mile in this fall. I also became a race director. So there's a race that's going on July 22nd. It's called the Snake. It's a 10 mile trail run. And we have trails at the, that there's a trail called the Blue Trail that, you know, you talked about, you know, having a reputation. The Blue Trail has a reputation as being fairly easy. Mm-hmm. The White Trail has its own support group for people who've been abused by it. And and so a lot of it's at Clinton State Park at you know, right outside of Lawrence, Kansas. And the format for this race is it runs on both trails. And so that every time you come to a connector, you take it. And so you're running combination, because most races would go out on blue and come back on white. That's kind of the format. That's kind of the way that a lot of the, you know, the 100 mile or the 50 mile, there's a 50K. So that, you know, the idea for the snake was, well, let's just run, you know, back and forth on both of them. Last year, the race director, it went away for a while. The president of the club asked the race director to do it. He said, I'll do it one more year. You've got to find a new race director, though, because I'm not doing it anymore. So I jumped in. This is my first try at race directing. So
it's an experience.
Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts there. Yeah,
so. Indeed.
But
it's fun.
It's fun. It's fun. I've been enjoying it. You know, trying to learn the back end of Ultra Sign Up and, you know, getting things to, you know, everything's working right. So
that's awesome. You'll sleep well the day after.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of funny because I went with the race director last year, and all the runners are gone, and he says, "Okay, now we go run." I go, "What?" He goes, "Well, the direction arrows don't work on the way back, and so we have to go to run 2 miles out and change the direction arrows for the people for on the way back, so they get the right crossover, you know, all the crossovers." That's and funny. So we ran out and did that, and then it was kind of
that's
fun.
Awesome.
But yeah, I enjoy I've just the experience and so yeah, race directing is fun. But yeah, I got a 50 mile, and then across the years, I still am trying to figure out what time I want to do. I was thinking 48 hours because I've run slower, and so thinking to get 100 miles, I'm at more than the cutoff time of, you know, most are 30 hours, and so I was thinking, I do 48 hours and do 100 miles, but then I'm thinking they do it for 6 days. I mean, could I get up and go for 6 days in a row, and how far could I get in that?
You can.
So that's kind of my thing is, and I think I'm kind of leaning toward the 6 days of, you know, just doing that.
That's awesome. Is that the one that Ray did across the years?
No.
Camille did across the years, didn't she?
Which one does Camille do that one? That's the one right at the end of the year, right?
It's like right at the end of the year. It starts at 1 year. It starts in, you know, the 28th of December and goes to January 3rd or something like that. I mean, it's
I'm pretty sure Callie was out there. And,
yeah.
Is it? Where is it?
Phoenix.
Okay, so Arizona. So yeah. Everybody's out there.
Yeah, and it's a one mile, you know, kind of not, you know, paved. It's paved. A lot of it's paved or sidewalks. It's one of the training camps for baseball, Major League Baseball, out there. So it's a 1 mile, 1 point some mile loop, and you just go. And
we could do a 1 mile loop race. That's insane. Very cool. Well, I wish you well at it. I think you're going to do a great job. Particularly if you do 6 days, I think you can get up every day and get some miles in. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was thinking is, if, you know, could I get up every day and do 12 hours, you know, see how far I can get, you know, in 12 hours, and just do a 12 hour off, and see how far I can get. So yeah,
that'd be a neat experience.
Mm-hmm.
But then you know, on my bucket list, there's some you know, Trans Rockies and, you know, some of those multi-day races, multi-stage races. That's kind of appealing. I thought that could be an interesting challenge to, again, see, can you keep yourself going for, you know, sleep and then get up and not be too sore to move.
Right.
It's like a 200 miler.
Yeah.
Same concept. Yeah. Very cool. Same
concept. Yeah.
I think it's going to be awesome.
That's good. Well, hey, thank you guys. I appreciate it. I have a tradition that I do called the bridge questions.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
So what aid station food do you not find that you think should be at most aid stations?
Oh, jeez.
I would say peanut butter and jelly sandwiches without the crust.
Okay.
Like the Uncrustables?
No, I don't like Uncrustables. I want a homemade peanut butter and jelly sandwich with the crust cut off, so I don't want to choke. I don't like Uncrustables.
You don't like the crust?
Well, it's hard to get down sometimes without like a lot of extra water. Yeah. So that'd be one for me.
That's a hard one because I'm pretty, like, everything that I might go to, they probably have. I'm thinking like Umstead. I'm thinking like Big Aid Station, right? They had fruit. They had hot soup. They got cookies.
I mean, I would also say Go-Go Squeeze applesauce should be at every aid station.
Go-Go Squeeze should be.
Okay. Yeah.
So if that's not there, then missing out.
Yeah. You don't have to do goos and stuff. Just do like the portable applesauce, squeezable applesauce, or squeezable like baby foods, that kind of stuff. I'm just thinking of stuff that I don't have to put in my pack anymore.
I've also figured out that apple juice.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it?
Rocket fuel. Like, you know, it's short lived. Like, mm-hmm. I will notice when it wears off, but. If I'm looking for a quick boost.
You're welcome.
I mean, it's just straight sugar, but.
But it's good for your gut. It's actually really good for your gut, too. The pectin actually settles your stomach.
Really? So it settles your stomach down. So, I mean, my go-to has always been ginger.
Ginger does, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's always been something that is just.
Now, that would be another thing that should be at all aid stations is a little ginger chews.
Ginger chews. Yeah. That's a lot of the races I've have run have had those. I didn't even know ginger chews were a thing until I started running.
Here's the irony is we have none of those things at our aid station.
Yeah.
Just so you're aware.
I guess you'll be cutting off the crust.
Yeah. And eating it.
Well, they make, you could, it's like a press that we would like, It's a round thing with cuts the middle out of the bread, and then you press it and it like crinkles around the edges, and it makes like the Uncrustables.
Make your own Uncrustables.
So
they've got just the square too. Like you just cut the crust off.
Yeah.
But then the stuff is squared out the sides.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, you need to seal the edges. What's that? I started this thing with the aid station food as one of these questions because it's like. I ran across. I was at the Jackass, the Javeliner Jackass, and at their aid station, they had pumpkin pie, and I thought, this is like great food. It's like exactly, you got sugar. It's got a little fiber. It's got it's soft enough you can get it down quickly. And I was just like, yes, pumpkin pie. That should be like one of the things we had
at an aid station.
You know, my first thought was when he said that is that sounds like a perfect 200 miler food.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we talked to Wes plate, because I was thinking even at 100 mile, like I still am very careful about like getting into a burger or something like that. But that's what I thought. Oh, 200 miler. Like I'm not hiking a lot. I could eat pumpkin pie. You know what I mean? Like I'm not trying to.
So at Capital,
I could probably get away with it at Capital. The problem is that if it hits me wrong, I got zero.
Like, you can make pumpkin pie.
I got I got zero slop.
Yep. You can eat it and then make it.
Okay. Second question is, what's the weirdest thing you've seen on the trail?
So I would say that. I did not see it, but I saw pictures of it at our first Hydra event that we did this past year, last April. People came back telling us about this large fish that had been dropped from the sky that was laying on the trail. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it was just this dead fish that they then had to kind of basically run across, jump over every time. But it was huge. And so that'd be something weird on the trail.
Yeah,
I will also say myself, I've laid on a trail at 100 miler and ended up DNFing because I was dying of just like gut issues. But I was laying on the trail.
me personally, it was a goat, but it wasn't a goat. It was a bush that every lap on by the, you know, you start hallucinating. Every lap I'd come around and be like, why is it a goat? Oh, wait, no, it's the same bush. All right. And it was just, you know, you hit it just right.
Are you sure?
Am I sure? At this point, no. It could have been a goat.
That's right. So the third question is, what's a word or phrase that sums up your philosophy of life?
I'm sure we have the same one, don't we?
Just show up.
Yeah.
Just show up. That's our motto for the ultra running guys. And there's a backstory to it. And it started out with the gym and the workouts that we were doing early on. But, you know, the bottom line with that is sometimes things can feel overwhelming. Sometimes, you know, if you try to look at the whole deal, then it's easy to come up with excuses, talk yourselves out of it. And so just show up means, hey, just start. Just put on the shoes, walk out the door, start, you know, show up at the start line, get back out on the trail, whatever that next thing is of, you don't have to solve it, but show up in whatever that next step is.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of like when we talked about, you know, what I think about some of the races I sign up for, and I tell you, I'm terrified in that, but I'm also excited, is that ultimately, I mean, I live by this idea. It's not just some fancy slogan that we say. It's something I truly believe in. It's the idea that regardless of what's going to happen, what it's going to be like, I don't have to know the outcome. I literally just have to show up and see what happens and let the event itself unfold. And continuing to embrace that idea has removed any kind of expectations. I'm not I'm barely a mid-packer to a back of the packer person, right? So I don't have expectations, but I used to believe I was supposed to run at a certain pace and do a certain type of thing. Not anymore. Like, I've even eliminated that kind of expectation. Now, yes, I will have time goals and things like that, but not in a way that kind of drives what I believe the performance should be. So instead, I buy into this mindset that if I just show up to the starting line and let things play out that they play out, I'm going to have a lot of fun and it's going to suck, but it's going to be something that I look forward to and being a part of.
Cool.
Just help spur action.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting us. This was great.
Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. My online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do not know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.